In your absence, Mr. Konyama, there was a question which was asked. For sure you'll be able to respond. Honorable Kweku is not here. Let's also welcome the chairperson and board members of PRASA and the functionaries from PRASA.
I think DJ.
Honorable members, we're going today to have a very long day because our belief is that we should be able to do this work, but do it thoroughly, so that at least at the end the outcome becomes outcomes that we believe can be able to stand the test of time. We shall be starting with the presentation that will be coming from PRASA. I know that Dr. Mulife will be presenting, and we anticipate that probably the presentation takes 30 to 45 minutes, and then the rest of the issues will be coming from honorable members, which probably will be able to take us up to lunchtime. The question which was asked by honorable in the absence of the acting director general, who is acting on behalf of you as the acting director general, and nobody was able to respond to us. You see, in Hollywood, there is never a vacuum. So we anticipate that the actors, as they act, there will never be any vacuum. You're welcomed, acting DG.
Yeah, it's you because you don't want to answer the question.
No, I was pressing to answer.
Here it goes. Thank you very much. I was saying that was the question which was asked, but when time comes, we will expect you to answer that question. Dr. Mulife and your team, I've already welcomed you. I'm going to give to you, sir, so that you can be able to present the annual financial statement and reports of PRASA to this collective. Thank you, Dr. Mulife. It's your turn.
Thank you very much, and honorable members, the acting DG, PRASA team, and DOT staff. It's once again a pleasure to get the opportunity to present. We will follow our tradition and be businesslike. I'm going to ask the acting Group CEO, Mr. Collins Letswalo, to do the presentation of the annual financial statement.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thanks to the chairperson of the PRASA board. Thanks, Honorable Members. Mine is to present. And I think the AG has done quite good work in presenting what they found to be issues on our financials. We're going to start with the highlights of the annual financial statements of 15-16. I'll take you through the assets, the liabilities, the income statements. We'll look at other expenditure. And we will go into issues of irregular expenditure. We'll then look at other findings of the Auditor General, which I think for oversight purposes, the committee will be interested in. On slide number 3, we have received an unqualified audit opinion from the Auditor General. The group posted a shortfall of 312 million, which is better than the amount we got, which is more than a billion, which is was about 714 million, better than the previous year. This was mainly due to the transfer of 800 million from capital to operational subsidy, in line with the mainline passenger services subsidy that we do get from the department from time to time. The income on the fare revenue remains a concern, as the fare was about 7% less than the prior year. We will deal with that in the different slides that we have to present going forward. The total assets, as you see, have increased in total about 23.6%, showing an increase in the capital spending that we have been doing. Our cash and cash equivalents show an increase, which is an anomaly, because if you look at what is happening on trade and other receivables, vis-a-vis what we have on the trade and other payables, you'll find that BRASA is struggling to pay its suppliers, because we are almost, and I'm saying almost, technically insolvent on the basis that we have the cash in the bank account, but that cash is money set aside for capital, so we can't use that cash. We can only use the interest that we get out of that for purpose of our operations. We'll indicate later on what has happened in that regard and why we are in the position that we are in, and we have been in until the end of the 2015-16 financial year. prepayments for capital expenditure has increased as well by 34.7%. Our investment property has gone up by 7.1%, and our inventory has increased by 16.9%, which shows a positive and potentially healthy balance sheet. Total liabilities, you would see the movements there, where the trade and other payables have increased. Consequently, you'd see the capital subsidy and grants has increased by about 27.2%. You'd see that capital subsidy and grants, it's still about 89% of what we have in there. Going to the income statement, which is a statement of financial position, you'd see that operational subsidy has increased by about 6.1%. Our lease income increased by 18.3%. Our expenditure as a group have increased by about 5.2%, which is a great difficulty for us. Operational shortfall has increased from 1.2 billion to 1.5 billion, which is about 26.9% increase. So for us, that remains a very big concern. The net finance income mainly coming out of the interest that we earn of about 417 million has increased by 125%. This is just cash that we put aside for some time until we execute our capital project, which then gets paid. It's not a sustainable line for income that we must have. Additional subsidy of 800 million, as I said earlier on, mainly for what we call mainline passenger services. Then, of course, there is about a property valuation of 143 that gives a shortfall of 312 compared to the shortfall of a billion. As I said, if you take out 800 out of that, you would see that we are not necessarily doing very well consequently. So it's something that we must look at, something that we remain to focus at. So regardless of the fact that the net shortfall has decreased, It had nothing to do with operations. It had more to do with the 800 million that was injected as part of the subsidy. And given the fact that our expenses have also grown, that remains a difficulty. The splitting of expenses, you would see that we spend 52% on employee benefits. The clear indication that we are in trouble. In fact, what we were looking at is that our subsidy money actually pays salaries and it exhausts them before we start to do any work of process. So that's where we are. Usually a healthy company would have employee costs between 30 and 40% at max. We are sitting at 52%, very clearly not sustainable. We have been doing the figures. We are top heavy as PRASA. For instance, what we have picked up is that for each and every executive that we have, senior managers that report to them is a ratio of 1:2, which does not happen in a normal business. So it means at the top level we are quite heavy. And we need to rationalize those expenses on the employee benefit side. One of the biggest expenses that we have is energy expenses, those attraction costs that we have that we pay to Eskom in the main and other municipalities, as it were. One of the other aspect of our business of expenses is the haulage fees that we pay to a company called Transnet for a service in our view, or for a network in our view that was built for both of us. It's something that we are busy discussing. One of the biggest expenses as well is the security, which is 6% of the total cost in PRASA. So for us, it remains a concern that we are spending more money on security. You can see that even security is more than college fees, is more than municipal charges. So for us, that remains a very big cost that we need to look at. There's maintenance expenditure of about 2%. We think that that maintenance expenditure must increase if we are to have reliability on our rolling stock. So on the other, that is 12%, you see our insurance premiums are sitting at 1%. Train control officers' cost, we might as well just add that to employee costs. Those train control officers belong to a company called Transnet. We pay for that as well. 2% goes to computer expenses. Professional fees are about 2%, and other smaller items and other expenses are 6%, as it were. The next slide is an indication of where we are in terms of subsidy acquisition or OPEX expenditure. Here we are just trying to indicate to the committee that we are ramping up on capital subsidy and the OPEX expenditure over the period has increased. You'll see that in 2011, we're sitting close to about 6.5 billion, 6.6 billion as it were, and you'd see that our operational expenditure in the year 2016 ramps up to 9.2 billion. A clear indication of something that is not sustainable, given that the operational subsidy had increased as it were from 3.1 billion to only 4.8. So very clearly, that line, which is the blue line, must move if you are having a healthy organization. That grayish line of OPEX must always be below the one of the operational subsidy. But it has increased, so it means that on those basis, we continue to make losses in that regard. Then dealing with the matters of irregular expenditure, where process was not followed, rolling stock and general overhaul. Here is where we have hired companies to come and help us refurbish our rolling stock. And over a period, we have done that on contracts that we are now finding out that they are declared irregular. They are declared irregular due to the fact that at the time when they were supposed to have been renewed, a new tender process was not followed, and a deviation process was then entered into, and the view of the Auditor General is that that must be declared as irregular, and we have as well agreed with them that we must then declare it irregular. You'd see that Swifambo at about 715 million in this year, you'd see SA Fence and Gate at 231 million, Siemens at 646 million, Siangena at about 3.2 billion, and CIA Energy at 148 million. And the various others, of course, at 2.9 billion, giving us a total of 14.6 billion of irregular expenditure, 13.9 of which is for this, discovered this financial year, as reported by the Auditor General in the previous presentation. Audit findings, mainly in supply chain management, where we are discovering that we don't have any supporting documents. Procurement and contract management issues. Contracts don't seem to be managed as the way that we expect them to be managed. Irregular expenditure and the disclosure notes that we had in that regard. On issues of procurement and contract management, as we have reported to the committee earlier, there were issues of a misnomer there in terms of the way the supply chain reporting was happening within PRASA. Supply chain, the CPO used to report directly to the CEO, suggesting that the CFO was not involved in matters of procurement. What we have then done is to take that back to report through finance, and that we think is going to help us, because then finance people would know whether the budget is there or not, or whether processes are followed or not. And in that regard, I'm sure that we would see a decrease in that, and we would see better contract management issues and the procurement procedures. On the finance, we had issues of financial lease, the capital commitment, the contingent liability, investment property, property plant and equipment, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I think to an extent, I think during the recess, the acting DG was discussing with the Auditor General. I think as they make comments about us, it will be important that they are here so that we can make comments about them and they can hear what our comments are.
Yeah.
The Auditor General agrees with us on certain matters at times. For years, they would agree that we must account in a certain manner on certain aspects of how we account. So we will think this we have sealed, we are proceeding. And as we are busy with the audit, they then change their view about how we must account for certain things. And in that regard, they have changed their views about our development leases at times, how we account for certain finance leases. They either agree with us or not. And of course, they have the power to decide whether they agree with you or not. Once you disagree with them, you can disagree with them. It means that if they disagree with you, then you have got a qualification because you have not agreed with the way they do things, which is why you would see that on matters of what they call adjustments of financials, they say misstatements, then they will call it a misstatement once you have adjusted for the 31st of May. So it's those issues that we deal with as we move forward. And our view is that we must have a closer working relationship, that in cases they change their minds about how this must be accounted, at least we must agree up front on those matters before the audit starts. So there's issues of information technology and systems, service continuity, and leave provisions. we have issues of those matter of a special loan leave provision, simply because what then happens is that as process was 17,000 employees, and we also happened not to have an automated leave system. Sometimes leave that people have taken is not captured, and therefore on our leave provisions we are lower than what we expect, and vice versa. So those are issues that we are having. On this service continuity as well, the more you get to go out on open tender and you have other people come in to take over systems that ordinarily would have been one service provider, then when you get over the other service provider, issues of service continuity become a problem right there, because what others come and do, the handover is not done properly in that regard, and for obvious reasons. I mean, people would love to stay with PRASA for as long as the time permits, of course for obvious reasons, but we think that we must go out on tender and make sure that others have got an opportunity to provide services. So at some point, I think in our service level agreements, we must make sure that we close that loop where the continuity can be there. So business continuity seems to be also a problem. In that regard, HCM, issues of overtime and suspensions, where there have been prolonged suspensions of individuals, and money is being paid for them. Issues of acting allowance compared to the time period is a 3 months acting allowance, acting period that is allowed. People do act for more than that, and as a consequence of that, it is then declared irregular, because if someone acts for more than that, they still have acting allowance still. Issues around predetermined objectives, I think the Auditor General has already alluded to the fact that they have found that 50% of our predetermined objectives are not necessarily smart, as they would say, and their usefulness, therefore, there are inconsistencies in the way that we report as we move forward. Those are issues that we are dealing with. We are busy developing an action plan to deal with those matters, as it were. To just indicate what we are doing, we instituted a review of policies, processes, and procedures in supply chain management, human capital management, and the ICT policy that would be going to the board in NS very soon. The realignment of current existing organizational structure to increase efficiency and enhance control environment. As we said, some of the few things that we have done, like moving supply chain back to finance, taking the payment aspects of the payroll back to finance, and making sure that capital budgeting is done at a finance level and not outside finance. So beefing up finance, beefing up supply chain, and making sure that the AC starts to work and the ICT also becomes an integral part of our business. And introduce and implement proactive assurance in key processes to increase an element of prevention rather than then deal with the matters once they've happened, because then they will be part of the audit report, as it were. So those are the issues. I hope that we have addressed all the matters. We'll then take any questions that are necessary. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Letswalo. Honorable members, Honorable Keita, Honorable Musinga, the line will come through this way.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think firstly that we would be able as a committee to have a better view of the department's report if we actually had all the documentation we've requested. You know, also so that we can have an explanation of why did all, you know, decisions that were taken in meetings, et cetera, et cetera. You know, when are we going to get those minutes? When are we going to get the attendance register so that we know why decisions were taken and how they were taken? But to get to the first question is, I would like to ask the department what plans have they put in place to address the audit findings? And can the committee be provided with a finding schedule, as alluded to by the Auditor General, that they anyway provide the department with, and then supply the committee actually with a schedule containing the findings as well as who is doing what, by when are they supposed to do it, what are they supposed to do, with, you know, with a clear outcomes of those findings, in, able to get to the root causes as well. Then I want to just, okay, why is there a repeat finding on the procurement and contract management? Has any consequence management or consequence processes been put in place for staff that is failing to comply with processes and with legislation? And can the committee also, and we've requested this before, can the committee please be provided with that schedule as a matter of urgency? I think just importantly, because although the cost implication might not sound that big, the 2% and the 1%, but every cent you can save is a saving. So I would like to know how far is the discussions and the negotiations with Transnet when it comes to the haulage and train control costs. If there is the possibility of please providing us with just an explanation on the 2% professional fees. And then my last question is, of the 44 performance targets, 18 were achieved and 26 were not achieved. What percentage of the budget was utilized on the 26 not achieved? Was there any funds redirected or were funds saved? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Musinga.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. First question might be a bit naughty, one of a naughty one to Dr. Molefe, because we must also ask questions to the Honourable Doctor. A repeat question from the 12th of April this year, when I asked you, Doctor, in recognition of the fact that you were only appointed in August 2014, would you then expect from there to now that your financial management report would get thinner? And I'm referring to the last one. How many pages did the last financial management report consist of, and do you feel that there's progress in that the management report is getting thinner? When we get to the presentation of Mr. Letswayo, on page 3 of your presentation, the third bullet point, which mentioned that there was a transfer of 800 million from capital to operational subsidy, what was the main reason for that, or were there more reasons? Was it because of initial bad budget allocation? Was it because of a change in programs, or was it merely a change of priorities? Then the following bullet point, which is the fourth bullet point also on page 3, where you say that the fair revenue remains a problem, and in fact that there was a recovery of 7% less compared to the previous financial year. What are the main features in this problematic situation of fair revenue that actually should increase, since all other services and expenses increase, and there's a particular ratio that one should obviously maintain in terms of sustainability in rendering a service and income from that service? So is it a recovery problem, or was the subsidy increased, or was there a deliberate decision around that, or is it some orange light that might turn to red, and one should then take measures before that? Then turning to your page 6 on the presentation, and I'm referring to the arrows on the right-hand side, and it might be a matter of opinion, debatable, you know, whether the arrows should go up or down if there's an increase in shortfall, given that arguable be in some cases point down, and in other cases two or three arrows down, you know, it's pointing upwards. It might be a bit technical in nature, but I would like to get your explanation between the losses in the operational and cash shortfall losses, which increase as your arrows going down, and then lower down in terms of amortization or depreciation, where again the losses increased and there your arrows go up. Then in terms of procurement of goods and services, I know that previously in documents that I read historically, there was a necessity then towards implicate or implementing this preference point system, which is all part of a very important act, the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act. But then I see failure for this to be implemented. So we have the strength of the act. We have a very clear methodology around how it should be applied, but it's just not applied. Why not? What's the problem there? Because it seems to be a pure management implementation and supervision and control issue which should be taken up in a system, and it should just be part of the process. Then similar to that, there were issues before around the approval of disciplinary processes in cases where consequence management was addressed, and now that the approved disciplinary processes are or have been approved, simple question, why is it not enforced by senior management? It's been approved, the disciplinary processes are clear, so why isn't it applied? Why don't we see any movement on consequence management in terms of staff transgressing on that, and we see repeated transgressions around that. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Ramakrishnan.
Oh, thank you, Honourable Chair, and thanks to the presentation, acting Group CEO and the Chairman and Atemuli. Thank you very much. As a starting point, I didn't, I was here when you started. I'm just curious to know, this is probably the second meeting where the board, the entire board, does not present themselves to the committee. The last meeting we had with yourself, we had asked the question, and the Atemulife during the night told us he wrote some email to the other members of the board to be present in the meeting. But they eventually did not arrive. So today I don't see them. I don't know whether they are still a functioning board. If they are, where do they account? I would have thought that they account here. That's where we interrogate the work that they do and the decision they take. They have to account and respond to that here. So I'm just curious, Chair. I know that there's not been any apology rendered. That is now the second time that we ask or we see only two representatives from PRAS, the acting and the chair. I just want to know what's actually really happening. What is behind what we are seeing? Is anything we need to be concerned about? Surely I'm concerned if the board does not present itself to a meeting of parliament that has to consider the work they do in a year. It's one of the most important meetings in the calendar of a functioning board. I don't know whether I should pause and get an answer, but because it may lead to the question, the second question is to whether as a committee we're happy and satisfied to take this presentation as presented with the very thin board present, or they would probably have to make phone calls and get the other board members here. I'm very uncomfortable because we do want to ask, the board must really account. Having said that, Chair, I have a list of other questions that I want to just quickly go down to those questions. And of course, whether we proceed or not proceed, it will be in your hand, Honorable Chair, given what I'm raising as a serious concern. I don't want to make a definitive statement, but it gravitates towards the undermining of the committee. And I don't want to make it definitive. I'm saying it's gravitating towards that. And I'm not sure whether we should allow it. I'm inclined to say we should not allow it. We should ask the PRASA board to present themselves here, an account. Now, Chair, should I continue?
Thank you very much. No, Honorable Ramatlakana, this is a very critical question that we must all entertain as to having it been asked, what do we do? Because it falls directly into what Honorable Keita has said in terms of the outstanding issues, which we said we give in PRASA three weeks for them to be able to respond, which the committee secretary has not given us. Because it was going to be very helpful that we've got the issues that we requested when PRASA was here, and then we're able to ask questions based on the information that we got from PRASA, and then we're able to proceed. But this one, I stand to be guided, Honorable Members, as to what do we do, because even previously it was Dr. Molefe alone. It looks like it's a one-man show if you look at him, but he is complying, doing what he is supposed to do as a member of the board in PRASA. The rest of the members of the board are not here. We need to find out from him what exactly are the issues, and then we should take a decision as to how do we move forward. Dr. Malif.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me start off by saying that it has never been our understanding that the entire board has got to be here to present the report. That is a starting point. The chairman, in many respects, and the group CEO and the group chief financial officer would represent the board. But in this particular instance, by the way, the invitation comes via the Department of Transport. And the invitation was very clear that it is the chairs and group CEOs of the entities and the chief financial officers who are invited to this meeting. And we operated on that basis. I have not seen the communication that comes directly from the PCOT because it doesn't come to us anyway. In our view, there's nothing that lies behind this. It's a simple thing that we got this invitation stating Chair, Group CEO, and Group Chief Financial Officer. Of course, the company secretary has always got to be there with us. So, in a nutshell, that is the answer, and it is not disrespectful to the chair or to the committee.
I was just checking with our company secretary. The letter is very clear. We will never write directly to the board of any entity. We write via the minister to the entities, and the letter is clear that we inviting the entities. We have never at any call, at any time singled out to say these are the specific people that we would want to have, because for example, we can say we want the person who's in charge of the audit committee, board member who's in charge of the audit committee, board member who's in charge of HR, they're not here to can be able to account if there are issues that impact on them directly. So it has never been our approach that we will single out and say these are the people that we want. I've seen Honorable Carter, I've seen Honorable Sibande. Oh, okay, point of before, Honorable Khade.
No, but Chairperson, but it was a norm that when we invite the Board of Trust, they come with other members. The Chairperson of Board knows very well. He used to come with other five Board members, Member Matlala, and other members. They used to come here. Maybe we can get clarity. What led that they don't want to come anymore? They send him alone. Because they are setting you for fire, you see. He's a setup for you. Because now they are running away and throwing you into the fire. Because you are not a board alone. You know? At a particular point in time, if you remember correctly, we even said, you know, the acting group CEO or the group CEO must come with their CEOs. Because at some certain instance, they will ask questions that you cannot be able to respond to them directly, alone. So the other CEOs must be able to respond to us. And if they're setting you alone here, unless, say, you know, because honestly, we even mentioned it in last meeting. But why always other people are left behind? Why can't they come here? We even gave you instruction, if you remember correctly. So where are they? Where are their apologies? Remember that you said, where are their apologies? Why can't they come here? They are board members. They can't account here. You know? This is very serious, Chair. I don't know. But I'm, if I can get a clarity, maybe, what went wrong, what changed? Because it was this. I mean, it's something that has happened previously. You know, the board used to come with all other members. What changed?
Before you come in, I see the hand of the acting DG. But we must make sure that we round up so that we are able to see our way forward. I think when you will be speaking, one of the members just guide and give us a way forward.
Chair, thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Chair, I hope I will still have a chance to explain myself about the acting. I just want to go into this matter now. Chairperson, the PFMA is very clear in terms of who is the accounting authority. And it is obviously the board as a collective. That is very clear. I needed to clear that one out. Now, Chair, where there are no really clear rules, and you will definitely find gaps like this. Of course, there is an expectation of the whole board being here. But Chair, I've been in the department for a very long time. Almost all the 12 entities, when we accompany them to Parliament, they never come as the whole board. That is a fact. I really do not want to belabor the point. I think the question really is when they say we want PRASA, the department come with PRASA. And this is a matter that we discussed with the minister last night for a very, very long time, until around midnight. Because I was saying, really, there are instances where they then accept the DDG or acting DDG, and then other instances they say, no, Sifuna ODG. And then the other instances, a representative doing oversight on the entities. Now, we even have said that perhaps we need, and we have always been doing it, because the meetings are not necessarily the same. Meetings like the ones where there's a discussion on the annual report and audit reports and financial statement, you need the full complement. Even at the department level, you therefore then need the entire management. When there are meetings on specific legislation and other issues, then we. But it has been a practice. It has not. It has really not been penned down in terms of for this type of meetings. This is what needs to have a result. We are going to hear, Chair. We are going to hear the other entities for the next 2 days. Chair, if it is the expectation of the committee that all of those entities should come with the entire boss, I don't think that from the department has been communicated in such a way. And I don't think that, I doubt if we will end. Probably learning from this, because perhaps as the first one, we'll then have to make that very clear going out there. But RAF, all of the other 11 or so, not okay, the others normally don't come in, like the regulating councils. You get the key people coming before the committee. So I just wanted to, with due respect, to then indicate that, because where there are no clear written rules, practice then become the rule. So we want, as a department, it is of interest to us, we would really want to correct that. The others are coming. I doubt if they are, all of them, the full complements of the board will be coming here to present to the chairperson.
Thank you very much. You've answered yourself. You have answered yourself in the sense that you said collective decision-making and collective accountancy. To me, that's very, very clear. I'll take you the last, Dr. Mulefe. Let me recognize the Honorable Sibande and Honorable Carter. That becomes very, very central. Collectivism of the boards. Honorable Sibande.
Chairperson. Sanbunan. Nyalamba.
Chairperson, I thought that I propose that maybe we continue. I thought that we'll be having some of the questions dedicated to the board, as we have already started, to check against time that some of the issues for the presentation of today that are covered. Because, for an example, to the chairperson of the board, last when he was here, we wanted to know about his statement about the African National Congress, which was there in the media. And then he said he doesn't know. And we said, if you must go to the air and clarify it and go to apologize, nothing happened. I'm citing an example. So, therefore, Chairperson, through you, because we have a lot of issues about the board itself, because we can't discuss the issue of the PFMA. We can't explain the issue of your account, your responsibility. You know exactly. Because a lot of people, they were interviewed before they come here. They need not to be told by us what to be done thereafter. So, Chairperson, myself, the meeting proposed with you is continuation in the presentation. And then I don't know where to start, whether to start or wait for the other people.
Let me finish with Honorable Carter, and then Dr. Mulefe will talk. I'm giving each one of you 2 minutes, 2 minutes rule. But there's a proposal, actually, if the Honorable Carter, you can be able to respond to the proposal that we continue.
Chair, I would agree that, you know, in a lot of committees that I've served before, you do not have an entire board coming. Okay, therefore I would say that we should continue. But I just also want to say that I honestly believe that the documents we requested would have given us better insight, and it has a direct impact on the annual report and the deliverables. I want to take you, for example, to the PRASA report. Let's go to page 121. where it shows the income of these board members. We talk about 800,000, 900,000. You know, this is the income of board members. What are they doing to be earning this money if they cannot even come to a meeting? But I would say that, yes, listen, let's continue.
Dr. Mlife?
Chair, I made a point at the beginning. I said the board of PRASA was given guidance by the department that the chair, the group CEO, and the group chief financial officer attend this meeting. We listen to our boss, we appoint, we account to the minister. If there was an oversight in that regard, it is a matter that could be dealt with in the future. The second point raised by Honorable Sibande, you know, I kept quiet at the last meeting, but I must state that we are meeting here as a parliamentary committee. We are not meeting as a study group of the ANC or a caucus of the ANC or any structure of the ANC. And if there are matters that affect the ANC, I'm a member of that organization, that matter does not belong here. There are officials of that party who give leadership to everybody. They can call me to a meeting to account for what is alleged. I did state at the last meeting that I have never issued a statement that said any party received the money, including the ANC. The record there, it's an affidavit in court which articulates what a particular individual who is the subject of the matter before the court said. And I think we should leave it there. Just to say to the honorable members, let's discuss ANC matters and the structures of the ANC. This is parliament. And I don't have to be saying this to members because you know the separation of the state and the party better than I do.
Okay. Honorable Sibande, I thought we were going to proceed because there has been a request that we proceed, and Honorable Ramatlakana was the one who was supposed to be on the tape, on the floor. No, no, it was Honorable Ramatlakana. After he asked a question, I said, let's hold it right there before you can proceed. Yeah.
Chairperson, let me correct something. No matter where it's in, so what, but procedurally, I'll put an example of the waxmen, that attorneys which we use, and et cetera, et cetera. I think as parliamentarians, once you give us a report, we're subject to know exactly what you mean and the evidence about a particular allocation, not to say because of the African National Congress. I wanted to correct that because we did the same thing with a lot of things which were implicated. Once you mention a person, we want a qualification or supporting documents about the allegation which you're saying. I was talking in that angle, but I propose that we continue.
Thank you, Honorable Ramatlakane.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Going back to the question that I was going to ask, I will not deal with the what number of board must be. I think that's a matter that we will have to discuss as a committee out of this. I just wanted to find out, the first question is, I'm surprised acting group CEO of the statement you're making on the auditing outcomes and the auditing scope. I would have thought that in the auditing process, the scope of that audit is decided upfront before the audit is embarked upon. Now, I'm worried if that midway that the Auditor General would change direction. to what has been agreed. Maybe if you could just clarify that, because then basically it becomes a problem. It becomes individual directed auditing, not necessarily auditing based on the scope and objective of that audit. That's just the first question. On the capital asset to operational subsidy, the 800 million. In the previous discussion, there was a shortfall. There's always been the 600 million in the red with the mainline passenger. I think you'd recall that was a discussion that we needed to deal with that issue in terms of the budget. Now, this 800 million that is a transfer from capital to operations, is it intended to close that particular gap that was identified a few years ago, as it was a rolling deficit, if you like? And where exactly from the capex, from what item did this money be was transferred from to this operation subsidy? If you could help me to understand that. Then on your slides, you've got a section that deals with irregular expenditure. So irregular expenditure in terms of PMFA is dealt with, and there's a particular way in which they're dealt with. I just want to find out, because irregular expenditure means that this must be regularized. It is part of the discussion we had in September of 2015. What is amongst on these, which of the amount has been regularized? Basically, there must be a motivation. There is this has happened as a value for money, and therefore this must now be condoned. Now, I'm trying to find out, because the previous acting group CEO, when at that time I spoke about that there was a process to do the to look at which of the condonation is going to take place. So I'm asking, this 14 billion and whatever is being done here, which of these items has already been condoned or are in the process of being condoned? And the others process, obviously, will include the SCOPA process that will be part of that condoning that particular process. Then the broad question in terms of all the other issues, I wanted to understand the turnaround plan or the turnaround, I hate to call it a strategy, because if you call it strategy, it's still a strategy. Turnaround plan to deal with all what has been identified. Some of them are the reoccurring process that are coming forward. For an example, the issue about misstatement, the whole thing that continuously right at the beginning, I had asked the question that the budget of 51 billion ring fence, it would require the appropriate structure to manage that expenditure. And I think that question was the question that the board was going to answer in subsequent meeting, that plan was put in place. I just want to find out in terms of that, what is being put in place to address that particular aspect. Then quickly, Chair, on the other questions, you deal with the suspensions and the leaves. I just want to find out, currently, how many staff members, that's on page 11 when you talk about it, how many of your staff members are still serving a suspension with pay and matters not being resolved? There was a list of 9 people before. Has that been sorted out, or are you still paying their salaries and suspension has not been finalized? I don't necessarily need to remind you the names, but you would know the reference I'm making to that stock and barrel suspension of some of the senior managers at some point. how far are you with that process? Are the suspension older than 6 months? What is older than 6 months? Do you have that? Then, Chair, I just want to ask the question in terms of some of the issues that AG speaks about, in particular what has been declared in terms of the investigations that is taking place in SASA in terms of various other issues. There is a declared investigation of Treasury. And I think the cost that Treasury spoke about, this was 25 million that was put aside for that investigation. There is a declared investigation here by the Hawks of the 39 cases that is in place. And what is not necessarily on this schedule here or the bullets that are captured on 6-1 is the Werksmann investigation in the document I have. Now, I don't know. Now, this is a 6-1 document of the AG report. The document I'm talking about is the AG document that he spoke to. So this is an investigation, other reports on investigation. So what is declared is Treasury, Hawks, and not much is said about the work that is being done by Werksmann. Now, I just want to find out from PRASA, is that investigation has been declared to the Treasury during their auditing process? And if there has been declared, what is their view around it? Is there a definitive comment that the Treasury has made? You would remember that we held a particular view when the information was given about appointment of Werksmann. That is September 2015. That's now the preceding you, sir. You are still another person. We had made we had asked questions, specific questions about appointment of Werksmann. What procedure was followed? What is it that happened? And is that in keeping with the appointment of attorneys? We were quite worried about that appointment. Now we know it's a matter of record that their bill is now reaching 100 million. I still want to know, in terms of the expenditure of it, where is exactly that? How is that going to be condoned? Appointment being taken as acceptance by the Auditor General, or is there any specific findings or specific comment? I'm worried. I'm asking that question because when I read this section of the AG's report, and I don't find that the statement made around it, and I worry as to whether that's been that declaration. And then the last question, Chair, is the AG report that there are two major problems that they are worried about in respect to PRASA, and that's this issue of leadership issue. That in terms of the leadership issues and the financial performance management issues, that for is red in their columns, which means it needs serious intervention. I need just to get some assurance from the Edgreen Group CEO what has been done to address that particular aspect that has been identified. I don't want to go there, but I would think that at some point at another interval, we probably will have to have some engagement about management letter. That you bought in terms of the range of matters in terms of the PRASA and financial management, that if we could have that conversation with you. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Sibande.
Thank you, Chairperson. So when I see you, meet our circle.
Chairperson, I would follow my colleagues maybe to start to ask questions, but my worry is one. I don't, before I start to open my mouth, the issue is about compliance with NCRASA. Number one, in 2014, the committee requested you, we as a committee requested a written plan from NCRASA on the turnaround strategy to address the AG recommendations and the plan on introducing the new rolling stock. Zange sithole, Chairperson. Again, 2015, the committee requested that NCRASA should report quarterly on routes made into the implementation of the rolling stock modernization program. As long as it told. Again, Chairperson, you see, I'm a little bit concerned about the significant emphasis on matters which were raised by the AG on 2014 and 2015, NCRASA in particular. And then again, on what my colleague was raising next to me, which is worrying me, Chairperson, if you recall very well, my worry is that if you talk about irregular expenditure, which was there on 2014-2015, instead of going down, it's going up. It's getting up. And also, Chairperson, which I wanted to find out, the issue of NCRASA performance targets, which were not met, I mean, which does not talk to specific and which is not specific and measurable. Consequently, they were not verifiable and therefore not reliable. While concerning the National Treasury's Framework for Management Program Performance Information, which is requiring performance targets to be specific in clearly identifying the nature and required level of performance, as and stated that the performance targets must be measurable. We have a Chairperson, NCRASA, you see, I wanted to check whether they have put in place that the non-achievement of targets. What have they put in place that a non-achievement target does not recur? And if there are any measures in place to safeguard up against that, Chairperson, also which was worrying me, you know, Group CEO, when he opened his mouth, earlier on, he spoke about technically insolvent, but at the same time, if you call it irregular expenditure, it's going up. And also he raised that the issue of shortfall is not doing well. To me, it's very easy for us if you are honest, unlike those who are hiding some of the challenges. Because the challenge can be around your sector or else the challenges can be other people around the institution. Chairperson, young worries that one. Uguchi, what measures are put in place in order to make sure that those things are not happening? And also, you know, the benefits of the employee, which is 52%, He also indicated that is not sustainable. The service quality. And the issue of the security, which is spending more, which is 6%. Chairperson, because you are angry about the duplication of responsibility between Transnet and BRASA. Because during his presentation, he mentioned that some of the responsibilities that are under Transnet. Because to us, Chairperson, as post-protocol committee, I think it's high time where we're supposed to amend laws whether to wrap one, either BRASA or Transnet, to avoid the duplication. And then also, Chairperson, which is worrying me, I don't know what medicine is in. Minister Tamahamura, or what must we do about the issue of vacancies? You see, I'll make an example. Yes, I don't know how can I, you see, Isintu can mean, maybe if I can mention Isintu, it's like I'm reducing you. Yes, a young person who's very energetic. Instead of looking an alternative how to make sure that he's taken on board, instead they're looking something negative, how to take him out. While there are a lot of vacancies. And there are a lot of people who are acting until when? Chairperson, this is not for the first time we spoke about the issue of vacancies. Remember, in the towers there, in the hotel, where we had the workshop with the departments, we raised the issue of the vacancies within the department and the entities, as well as entities. But nothing. No. You see, that is my worry, Chairperson. Because how can you meet your KPIs and targets if you are running short of your own stock? You don't have your own stock. The people are supposed to take responsibilities within yourself. You see, last one, Chairperson. What do we call it, this thing of motivation, staff morale. What do you expect from the young, energetic young man about his morale? This site is performing very positive. I'm citing an example. What about the others, in particular himself? He's promising that anything is coming all right, but at the same time, Imbazo, Imlindel, which will go at any time. What about the staff morale?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Honorable Khadebe. Honorable members, you must be mindful of time as we ask questions. No, probably preambles and the state of the nations are for another day.
No, Chair. The issue that I want to raise is in relation to the 6% of the security. Now, someone we engage, you promised us that you're going to try and cut the issue of the spending of the securities. I'm trying to check because probably as well the audit has found you in the middle of probably other measures. If you can be able to update us, how far are you in terms of cutting those costs? Mosu, we said you're going to try and reduce the 6% into, but what percentage that are intending to increase that? But then the other thing that I'm trying to get you understand, it's sustainable to spend 52% in the employees for BRASA, for example. Because I think you're going to face a very serious challenge if you can't try and cap that particular element. Because if you don't you still find summer strikes and everything. They want more increase, and the budget continues to increase. So that we try and help you in cutting costs there and there and close loop. The other thing that you just mentioned, you just mentioned that in terms of the SVM, you know, there are those who couldn't submit these supporting documents. I'm trying to check whether what have you responded probably in terms of, as the Auditor General says, you know, there are those who didn't do the disclosure and whatsoever. What step have you taken as the press in addressing such? Because as I said earlier, there might be a possibility that one individual was deliberate attempt, or it was just a silly mistake and a person couldn't disclose, or a person couldn't be able to provide supporting documents. Well, the other thing, man, it really worries me that you are having a challenge that every time when you engage with the Auditor General, he gives you particular direction to deal with issues. But there's a particular, you know, 360 degrees change. It really worries me. I guess you are correct, acting Group CEO and the DG, that, you know, the Auditor General is supposed to be here, so that you tell them face to face, Marana, please don't mislead the portfolio committee, because you are painting a wrong picture about us, whereas you know very well what went wrong. Because according to their presentation, it's like you are the one that is at fault. But I guess, as the chairperson has been saying, we're still going to have another second bite with the Auditor General. So I probably must invite yourself so that you can be able to straighten up these issues. Because it cannot be correct that you're always being painted as a wrongdoers. I've got a belief, strong belief in you, that you've got capacity and capability of doing the right things. Mm-hmm. But if they're going to change things at the last minute, it's going to inconvenience you. Mm-hmm. So people who should not just throw blame on you all the time. No, we cannot do that. But then I'm trying to understand what, if they give you those particular guidelines in terms of how do you deal with this audit findings or correcting these things, don't they give you a particular documentation that is a guiding tool for you to operate? Because if ever you've got a guiding tool, say, when they come and say, no, but you don't do it this way, say, no, but listen, here, you gave us this document, and we're working according to this. So that you are not being seen as a person who's defiant, because as per the Group CEO saying, every time when you are doing these things, they think you are defiant. You are not, you don't want to, you know, comply with these things. So I think that will be able to also to assist you in order to do very well with your auditor. Well, the other issue is in terms of the, you spoke about the issues of the realignment of the current status of the PRAS, of the organization. Can you be able to enlighten us? What are the financial implications? Because you know very well that every time when there's an organizational change, there's a financial implication. Are you going to save money or are you going to spend more money? Because we must be able to understand there was a challenge in terms of the finances were not allocated in the correct perspective as per your articulation, that things were thrown somewhere far away there and there, but they were not in the finance department where it's supposed to be. If you realign them, what is the financial implication after that? So that you can be able to know and look what is the future anticipation in terms of these things. Lastly, the group financial officer is not here again. Kwenzakalani. Because I'm sure it's part of the accounting authority.
My Oscar said, where is she? Who's acting? Who's at the Hollywood in a capacity? Because maybe we must be able to get an understanding. So that we, because it has become a thorny issue to me. That every time when you come here, the financial officer is not here. When you come to, engage issues of finances, why does it work? Unless there's a problem, if there's a problem, chairman of the board, please help us. Our choose them reef away. Because I'm a rake. She can't keep on earning for free. I got poor me. Thank you, Chair.
But you be no more where Gaul. Honorable Gecko.
Thank you, Chairperson. I welcome the presentation also, but my first take would be around the issue of the board. You see, Chairperson, in our last meeting with PRASA, we ended up on a high note with a question that was asking how a decision taken back there, because there was one board member representing the board. We cannot, Chair, in this meeting discuss credentials, but if the invitation to PRASA was such that the group CEO and the chairperson of the board be the ones who represent PRASA, it's fine. But it means to me we have a pending meeting that we must prioritize inviting the full complement of the board to Parliament, because we are the ones who recommend to the President that so-and-so must serve on that particular board. The other question that would look silly would be for me to ask the acting group CEO, though this question is only asked during someone's birthday, how old is he? To finish the question, to say how old is he in PRASA. I want to come to a conclusion whether he has overperformed or underperformed. You see, as a member of this portfolio committee or members of parliament, our responsibility is oversight, which includes observing what is right and what is wrong and making some recommendations. Lastly, Chair, can I go back to what was asked by two honorable members on the issue of train control officers. My understanding is such that if you are the one who has hired one, you are supposed to pay that particular person. If you are not the one, you and the service is rendered on your behalf, you pay that body that rendered that service. Because if you hire, you pay. If you hire, you can also fire. I have got an interest in that, because we must be sure if you have the mandate to pay them directly or you transfer fees to Transnet. My other concern would be, Chairperson, as we are interrogating this report and PRASA, we are not looking at it in isolation. We are taking care of what was presented this morning by the Auditor General. It was observed that 50% of your targets do not follow the SMART principles. I wonder why, as a portfolio committee, we overlooked that, because we are supposed to identify that. Thanks to the Auditor General that he has reminded us that 50%, it means you must have a plan so that when you present the next time, you are sure. And also, there was a qualification that you received on the issue of vacancy and around the issue of leadership, which includes, to my understanding, it may be the leadership of the department or the leadership of PRASA, because PRASA is mentioned there. I think this is what we've been discussing, because those people are all accountable to Parliament, good people. What I also comment is what I see on page 9 of your presentation. You can look at page 9 where from 700 you have recovered some and you are now at 300 and some. Those are the numbers there on page 9. Chairperson, there are also repeat findings. I would also ask if you have a plan to improve your performance. If not, you must be ready to have, so that come next time when you come in front of us, you are able to table that plan in front of us. What we need is clean governance. We also commend you for identifying the error that was there. You cannot hire a finance officer and you have procurement processes that sideline that very person. It can't be correct, good people. It's good that that person is back in his or her responsibilities. How I wish when you come to present a financial matter, that person accompanies the delegation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Molefe. I think this will be your turn with the collective to respond to the questions. Critical to me is what has been raised, the technical insolvency aspects. What does that really mean in terms of service delivery matters? Because if you are technically insolvent, it means there will be challenges in terms of how you will be dealing with service delivery. And then the other thing is all those companies which have been indicated to have issues in terms of how their tenders were renewed and up to where it led to a situation where you're having challenges. What really went wrong? Has there been somebody who has been found to have not done their work properly? What was the recourse or fallback in terms of the parastatal if somebody has not been able to do their work? Because obviously, if the tender is supposed to expire, you should know at least 9 months, 6 months, 3 months before that, and then you are able to go into programs, processes of making sure that you're able to live up to the expected ideals in terms of procurement issues in government. Has there been a recourse or for the parastatal to can be able to say, you have led us into temptation, and this is how we deliver you out of that temptation? Dr. Molefe.
Chair, let me start with the technical insolvency. But I think Mr. Letswalo, being a finance person, will probably deal in detail with that. What we're basically saying is that we're at a point at which when we look at the monies owing by the company and the income that the company has, what the company has, is such that whilst in the immediate term, we would still be able to pay our creditors, our debts, but in the long term, that situation would not be sustainable because when we look at the balance between the expenditure and the income, the expenditure is more, and it extends beyond the period that we are able to pay the creditors. we could easily be considered to be insolvent. That's why companies are required to conduct what is called solvency, liquidity and solvency tests to determine whether in the coming 12 months the company is in a position to pay its creditors. In our case, we are able to say so because we've got the government standing behind us, and we can keep asking the government to convert CAPEX to OPEX, but that is not enough. It is precisely the reason why we have to deal rigorously with the improvements in our operations, improvements in the cost containment, control, wastefulness of our resources. I know Mr. Letswalo has been doing a lot of roadshows. I attended briefly their executive committee management meeting on Monday, and he gave an account of what he is finding as he is doing his work. So that's really what we meant, and we have come to the committee here and said to the committee, it is unsustainable that PRASA is given the mandate to operate mainline passenger services, but there is no adequate subsidy to cover mainline passenger service in order to keep that service going, because our people in rural areas and who travel long distances deserve the same rights, have the same rights that everyone has got. And I think it's a matter that the National Development Plan also addressed. So we ended up keeping on taking out of our PRASA Rail operations, in particular Metro Rail, taking some money that has to be spent on other operational activities to keep mainline passenger rail going. We have asked the committee, please help us. Let's engage the DOT, let's engage National Treasury, so that we can resolve these issues. I mean, one of the things that we were asked to do, we've been repeatedly told that we need to open the Moloto corridor and do something about it. The reality is that it's an unfunded mandate. And in our discussion with the minister, we said, Minister, we're finding it difficult to include that in our annual performance plans, because we know that the objective factors militate against that. It's not under our control to make it happen. So we're going to be considered to have failed. So it is broadly in that context, but I'm sure Mr. Letswalo can deal with a whole lot of things, but he's dealing with the issue of redesigning our security system, dealing with issues of monitoring and surveillance of cable theft, because every time people steal, we have to spend more money on those things. We're dealing with issues of the quality of service provision, the quality of the products and services that we are getting. They were telling me that the other day that when we deal with the issues of overhaul and maintenance, we find that people put components in your trains and locomotives, which after that thing has run about 800 kilometers, they are all finished. So you've got to buy new ones. So I know the team is dealing with what kind of quality of components do we have to put in those things, and where must they come from. So it's being dealt with. So there's a whole lot of these things that are being dealt with. There's unilateral and irregular change of scope of work. A company starts with a contract of 20 million. Before you know, it has ballooned to 100 million because somebody kept on extending and increasing the scope of the company. Many of these things, which constitute the billions in irregular expenditure, honorable members, are things that we have uncovered now through the thoroughgoing forensic investigation. Many of them we would not have known. they have come out now as we do this investigation. But also it has to do, as Mr. Letswalo says, with the historical absence of proper contract management. They give a contract, nobody is supervising to know whether that contract is performing in accordance with the service level agreement, and even monitoring that that contract would be expiring on date X. Therefore, 9 months or so, or 6 months before that, we should be going out on tender on the same contract. That has not been done. Mr. Letswalo can give numbers, but we probably are talking of more than 100 of irregular contracts which were done in the context of the so-called confinement. People just confined and say, no, we confine it to so-and-so. And they did confinements in violation of the Treasury regulations. There are guidelines, but they have ignored that. Nobody dealt with that. These are the things that we are uncovering now. Is there consequence management? Yes, a number of those people have been charged. They are appearing for disciplinary hearing. Quite a number of them, when they were charged, they resigned. I know the key fellow was in supply chain in Metro Rail. I'm not going to mention the name now. Resigned when he was charged. And that particular one cost us a lot of problems. And that is the same employee who also would have been conflicted and did not declare, Honorable Khadeb. He would be a partner with somebody in a company, and that somebody in a company would create another company and bid, and he is the one who is sitting there doing the evaluation of that tender and assisting with the specs of that. So there's quite a number of these things which are a problem for us. I hope I have answered that first question of the chair. Honorable Hulsinger, you asked, is the management letter narrowing or is it expanding? I think the right person to tell me that is Mr. Letswalo, because management letter is dealt with mainly by the management. But in the light of the many things that we have uncovered, we expect a double whammy. On one side, it would reduce because we now dealt with questions of supply chain management. We put policies in place. We are putting systems in place, increasing controls. What he said, some kind of alignment of certain functions within the organization. From that point of view, on that side, things would change. We are dealing with issues of human capital management, where, again, we had problems of leave pays, abuse of leave days, people in suspension but remaining on the payroll without the matters being reported to the relevant senior people. In some instances, finding people who appear like ghost employees, and you have to struggle to find out who that person is reporting to. But Mr. Letswalo is dealing with all those matters with his team. So to the extent that those are being dealt with, you're going to see a reduction on those concerns raised by management. And the same would apply in the long term to financial controls as well. I mean, set up the steering committee that reviews all contracts above, I think it's from 10 million above, and it reports to the audit and risk committee. So those are matters that we are dealing with, but I would not, where I'm sitting, say to you it has expanded of narrowed, because there are many things that have come out which are legacy matters, by the way, these are legacy issues, and the Auditor General did say that these things come from there, but we had to include them because they themselves did not know about some of them. They were helped by some, with some of them, by the investigations we were conducting, because we were working very closely with them. I would have hoped that he would have said so, to give a bit of credit to us as well. So, I think the Honorable Ramatlakane on the issue of condonations arising relating to irregular expenditure. This is a hell of a lot of work. I'm sorry to use that word. There's a lot of work that is being done. There's quite a number of them that have been condoned, which we are able to do so within the law, but there are others that are unlawful, and therefore we would not be able to condone. But again, Mr. Letswalo would be pretty close to that situation than I am. Let me not talk for too long and say things that Mr. Letswalo can answer better than I do, and rather leave him to do so. And Yvonne Page.
Thank you, Board Chairperson. That was the Chairperson of the Board, Prasa, giving responses to some of your questions. Can we hand over to Acting Group CEO? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Honourable Members. we can easily give the schedule of findings, and has the management report reduced or not? It hasn't. I think we have about 500 pages. About 500 pages. Chair, you must protect me, because it looks like the Honourable Member has got a document he's not supposed to have. we're looking at that. I mean, the one of the department is less than 100 pages. I think it's 69. So it gives you a sense. Why is that? I think one of the first things is that a lot of debt comes out of the wash. As you do that, you realize that there's a lot of other things that were not done properly, and therefore it then comes to that. I mean, that also is linked to the issue of why is the irregular expenditure going up. As you discover it, you have got to declare it as irregular. In cases, it wouldn't have been irregular expenditure. For instance, the issue about the GOs, the board did it, which is the former board that did that. They followed the whole process, but the Auditor General then comes back and says, you should have gone out on tender rather than do this way, extend it in the way you've extended it. Of course, the issue is the openness of the whole thing. It's not that. In general, it was the very same people that have done the work before, and they continue to do that. I think the Chair has dealt with the issue of consequence management. Has anything been done? Yes. And I think as you do that, there are a couple of issues that you need to balance. The balance is whether people have made mistakes or people have committed irregularities. There's a difference. I say to the team time and again, there's nothing wrong with making a mistake. Because people that inherently don't work don't make mistakes. The problem comes when the mistake is not necessarily a mistake, but is an intentional irregularity to benefit somebody. How do you get that? When you investigate, you realize that people have made mistakes. In other instances that the Chair has listed where a supply chain manager gives a confinement. Chair, he didn't even sit. There was no evaluation that was done. He did a confinement, to a partner of his in a different company. So that's all he did. And of course, when you follow up those issues, people resign for obvious reasons. But we'll follow up those and we'll deal with that. Cost implications and the issue around the whole agent, the TCO. I think this issue of Transnet needs a lot of looking into, because we have done a lot of work now around the issues around Transnet and ourselves. Is a discussion with them going to solve our problems? No. And I want to say it without fear of contradiction that some of our problems are by design. Okay? Anything. And I say it. The day Gautrain starts making losses, it's coming to Brasa. Because it looks like everything that makes losses must be in Brasa. Okay? Anything that is given money must also not come to Brasa. I've talked about 60 rand 30 versus 3 rand 73 in this forum. And I'm repeating it again, that the reality is that at times we find ourselves either wittingly or unwittingly taking mandates that consequently put us into problems we have. I'm saying this because I'll give you an example of where we have taken Autopex. They sold us shares of Autopex. They asset stripped Autopex to the point that one of the depots in Pretoria, for instance, was sold by Transnet immediately after the transfer as non-core. Now, the question is, why did they take it? Because it's non-core to them. Now, it tells you a story. It goes on and on. And as I said, in our turnaround plan, we will dedicate a full chapter on legacy matters, because it's very important that we do that. Issues around 2% of professional fees, there are a couple of professional fees, some of them legal, and that are there. Part of it, of course, it's the matter of Werksmans, which is part of the professional fees that we have there. The financial management report, well, we can share that. I'm not sure that it can be easily shared with people that do oversight, but I mean, if the view is that it must be shared, there's no problem. But that's why the management report is actually for us, to look at other matters, because there are matters that are for the audit report that come to Parliament, which are bigger matters, but there are other matters that are admin in nature and that we need to intervene in, that we'll do. Why is the 800 million from CAPEX to OPEX? I think it's a realization that we have been given an unfunded mandate called MLPS. Is the full amount, Honorable Ramatlagane raises the 600 million? Yes and no. Historically, it was 600 million that was supposed to be put in there. The reality is that the service is coming down drastically. And there have been a few areas where we have reduced service, and therefore the costs are not that much. Consequently, it is not necessarily 800 million, but there's 800 million that is given, of course, taking into consideration the accumulated amount that we have. Fair revenue remains a problem. Yes, remains a very big problem. What's the problem? Fair evasion seems to have escalated. It has increased substantially in our system. We have an open system, and I think you must link that back to the issue of security. When you have got an open system, it means that our shanty yards, our station yards where we station some of our rolling stock, it's open. And you can just take an example of a house without a fence. Where do you put the security personnel? Consequently, we'll have more security personnel. And there's also a danger of, I mean, it happened in Langa just, I think, 2 weeks ago, where when people are unhappy with service delivery, because of our system that is open, they go to it and damage it. Here's the problem. When they damage, especially the signaling equipment, of a signaling system that is outlived its usefulness, they ban the signaling equipment. We can't find it anyway. We can't, because there's no one who will provide that those pairs, they are not there. So we have that problem. But I think if we then don't talk about this thing of stealing, just thieves in Brasa generally taking the money, we won't be talking to the real issues. Our employees do take our cash on camera. Some of them even stage robberies. We have a video. We thought we want a legal opinion before we put it on YouTube, because it's going to be very important. Someone has been trying to be claiming to be robbed, and the guy, I think, he has never robbed anyone in his life. So he passes the safe. He goes to the other side, collects the money. As he passes the safe, the person who's been robbed come back and say, here's the safe. Then they open the safe, they take more money, and they leave. You'll see it. We will come and we must play it in Parliament. At least there we are protected. We'll come and show you what happens in Brasa. Is the point of the revenue and fee evasion a red light or amber? It's a red light. It's a red light. We have regressed. So the revenue we are collecting now is revenue we collected in 12-13. So it tells you that we have regressed. And we are regressing. We are regressing. More and more people are finding it that it's easier to get into a system and operate, be there without it being paid. And that creates a problem for us. The issue around the errors, for me, I don't think it's a matter of interpretation. It's a cash shortfall. Of course, if it's a shortfall, it's a bad thing. But of course, the total shortfall decreased, which in real terms, if you take that 800 million, it would have shown an upshot, which is why we have, slide page 3, we are saying you must understand that it's not about the operations. It's about the 800 million injection that has put us in a better position. So what we are telling you is that we are in a worse shape than we were, and that's the reality. Then the issue about the PPFA and why people fail to implement. Well, anything above 500 million must be what is called 80-20. And therefore you can't ask for a quotation. In Brasa, it so happened that our colleagues decided that even when things are about 50 million, they will still ask for a quotation. So it happens. The approval of the dismissal process, is it enforced? Yes, we are enforcing. but the reality is that there is a balance you must make. As we enforce, the way corruption is endemic in this organization at times, it's scary. As we enforce, it can easily collapse. I'll give you an example. We take a decision. There is things called other contracts are irregular. So we decide to stop those contracts. We say we give you 6 months within which you must go in and do this, failing which we are cutting this contract. Year month six, we write to all service providers. We say, month six, this thing expires. Nothing happens. Come month six, finance decides, as they should, cut this thing. What does it mean? No spares, no components. What happens? What suffers is the operation. Now we had to go back to Treasury and say, we understand what we're wanting to do, but it's just not implementable. So they have given us another 6 months. Now we're going to make sure that that thing goes out on tender and all those things are done. So it's a difficulty, and that's why I'm saying it needs a balance. The issue around the scope, it's not necessarily about the scope and the objectives. So scope and objectives are almost the same thing. Remember, this is a regulatory audit, so they will just do the same thing. They will look at the risk and they will say these are areas where it's big and where that's where we're going to focus. The issue is, For instance, we agree with them. For years, we've been doing things called development leases. We said this is how we account for them. This year, there's a new team, new couple of new people in the Auditor General team. They then decide, no. IAS 17. We're applying IAS 17 this year. Now, IAS 17 has not started this year. It has always been there. The question is, why is it that this year is being applied differently from all the other years? And it doesn't happen only that. It happens in every other. And the issue is, we are not saying people must not apply what they seek to apply. We are saying, if we agreed up front on how we're going to deal with these matters, remember we close them and we account for them in the way we agreed. This year we'll also account for them the very same way we accounted last year. Now, when you come and you change, then that creates this problem that we have. And it's much more pronounced in other audits as well. We have seen it much more pronounced this year, and we have fought with them on a lot of matters around this matter. And I think they must say these things in the discussions where they are having with the committee. I think I've dealt with the MLPS issue and whether it closes the gap. Where is it transferred from? From the general capex. As we spend less on capex and we are seeing it, we are just taking the 800 out. If you look at our cash, you will see that we have got about 6 point something billion. Okay? It's about 6.8 billion. But you'd see that out of that, actually majority of it is just capex. So we take 800 out of that in different areas where we have not spent that money yet, and then we do that. But I think we have to explain one aspect of things. When you spend capex, and you accelerate that, for instance, you upgrade a station, you spend 300 million. You are saying, here's a station, 300 million in there. Understand that the maintenance must increase. So we have shown you what has happened to our OPEX budget. It has been relatively the same. CAPEX budget has increased. What is now happening is that your OPEX costs are now going to have to increase. And it's something that we must understand going forward. But there is a very funny phenomenon about this upgrade of stations. It's costing a lot. What is the rationale? No one knows. But what are we picking up? We hired a team of consultants to help us in the development of those stations and the plans. These consultants are paid based on the percentage. So what do? They prefer a bigger station with bigger money because it means more money for them. Okay? It only makes sense. But if they then give you a 600 million station, it means going forward, your OPEX must now increase to a bigger extent. So we are looking at that. There are stations that must not be as big as they are. And we are starting to say, look, let's redesign this. Let's look at a better way and look at the future total full life cycle costing of these things that we are doing now. Because we can sit in a position where we have got such a massive portfolio of stations that we are not be able to maintain going forward. So we are busy with that as well. The turnaround plan, we have a draft. We are busy working on it. We are going to bring it. We are having issues. The reality is that we must also talk to the 52% that we are spending. And the reality is that why are we not hiring more? I mean, this issue of vacancies. Does PRASA have vacancies? Yes, it does. Have we overemployed? We have. So you need to balance the two, because there is an area where you find that these are critical grades. That's where you don't have. Then there are areas where those people are not supposed to be there. Then you have. And the reality is that we know about buses that move people from certain provinces to come to PRASA without following any process. That's the reality. Do we have ghost workers? Indeed we have. Are we working on it? Yes, we are. And we'll report as we go along that we'll deal with those issues as we. But the reality is that we have ballooned, but we have ballooned in areas that we are not supposed to be. If you take the approved structure of PRASA and you look at what is on the system is more than the approved structure. So is it a vacancy? Is it not? So it's something that on a technical level, it might be a vacancy, but the reality is that we have got more people than the structure. Suspensions and all that. Well, 9 is an understatement. I think in PRASA we should be talking about 300, 400 people that are currently on suspension. Yes. The nine is in corporate, and it's not only 9 in corporate. What is the problem? It's a function of a dysfunctional employee relations in PRASA. If you go to any CCMA, you are going to find that we are one of the ones that they see every day in PRASA. Well, ER has also been used as a henchman that look for people to chop. If you talk, you are in trouble. And that's the reality. Now, as part of the roadshows, we have gone in there, we have seen what the problems are, and we are sorting out that area. We are engaging with unions. We are saying, let's forge a closer working relationship. You are there to protect or serve the interest of your members, but your members must firstly be our employees, and therefore we need to inculcate that culture of also working and not walking around with a sort to sort people out. And in reality, we shouldn't be doing that. So we'll give you the numbers. We have asked for the numbers. There is also CCMA rulings that were not implemented. When they don't suit PRASA, we don't implement them. So we have gone back. We are really coming to put measures in place to ensure that we deal with those matters. Investigations. Well, the majority of the irregular expenditure that we have is through investigations. And I think more than 12 billion comes from the Vertsman's investigation of the ones that we have. The issue around Hawks, 39 years, have they been declared to Treasury? Yes, the Vertsman's report has been declared to Treasury. It is my understanding that Treasury were involved in the appointment of Vertsman's, or at least they were informed of that, because the guys that do the other work of, of the 10 million and above do work with National Treasury, and they come from there, and they wanted to take the ones that Bergsman has not taken. We have taken a decision. The decision has been that at a board level, the decision has been taken that management will now be dealing with matters of investigations, that they must be located in management, and we are dealing with that. Part of it is the issue of managing the cost and understanding how we arrived at 100 million and who's getting paid and whether that thing was done ordinarily. The appointment of Werksmann, is it irregular? Is it not? It's something we have returned to the Treasury about to say, tell us whether this is regular or not. There are two schools of thought, and we thought, let's get someone to look at it and tell us what it means. How is this going to be paid for? Well, it's not budgeted for. We tried through the adjusted budget to get it from the adjusted budget process. It has been rejected, so we don't have the money to pay. But it's something that we are working on, as we said, as management, to see, firstly, whether what we paid we should be paid continuously. How are we going to deal with that? But we have separated issues. We have said matters that are criminal must be dealt with by the relevant authority. So we have already, I have written a letter to the head of commercial crimes at the Hawks to say, how far are you with these matters? And therefore, they must be located where they remain. And then we have dealt with matters that are, of course, in the courts, that continuously we need the assistance of Waxmans in that regard. There are other matters that we are going to have to deal with internally, that deal with our staff. So we have also taken that part to say it must come this side so that we can manage it. So that lesser and lesser work goes that way outside to be dealt with, and then probably we'll be able to deal with the costs. There are two major problems, leadership and financial performance and management and all that. Is there a leadership problem in BRASA? Yes and no. Yes, because the board has been intricately involved in matters that are management matters. And the explanation was quite simple, that when management does not do their work, we come to the portfolio committee says, but you are the board, you are the accounting authority, so you must account. So management not doing that, board saw the vacuum, they were filling that vacuum. As going forward, we have said to the board, remain where you should be, allow us the space to do our work. And we have been doing work, we have been given the space. It's not easy, but it's something that we are dealing with. We have to deal with. Sometimes we must say, no, that's our role. Please leave it. You see, so it's important that we deal with that. But you see, engagement on the management letter. Yeah, well, let's engage on the management letter. There is a reason why management letter is never tabled in Parliament. So we'll have that engagement, Honourable Ramathagan. I think it's important. Compliance in BRASA, the turnaround. Well, we have brought the turnaround. Have we implemented the recommendations of the Auditor General and really dealt with the root causes in the way that we could have? I don't think so. I think in other places we have found to be lacking. And we are closing that by giving commitments. So we are going to give commitments to the Auditor General. We are meeting them in the next 2 weeks to give them commitments on what we propose we are going to do. We have also agreed with them on various issues. I don't know why they are not mentioning it here, but we have agreed we are going to have a mid-year. So we'll do our financials, finish them, and we'll do an interim. So our interim financials are going to be given to Auditor General. They are going to look at them. They are going to audit. So they tell us, are we on the right track or not? Part of it is this smart objectives. We are going to give them to them to also, as our internal audit we have done them, they will do the same and then audit and see whether going forward our objectives are smart. Is it going to cost us more money? Yes, on the audit fees. How valuable we think is value for money? We think is value for money going forward. The modernization program. Well, can you have a sick patient running with Usain Bolt? No. The reality is that. No, we must deal with the reality. The reality is that brother is sick. Very sick. And it's sick literally, and it's sick, from figuratively. I say to my colleagues, I don't know whether when we decided to fund BRASA, the money was so heavy that it collapsed under it. And I think this is where we are saying there was a commitment to say there's 52 billion that needs to be spent. Maybe there's capacity that must be put aside to use that. But when you do that, then it sits outside the business somewhere. Then operations run as if this implementation of the 52 billion is not coming. And therefore, you need to integrate. Because you know what happened. Here's what happened. Once people knew there was a new baby coming, they focused on the new baby. They left the operations. Now, the reality is that we are reaching critical marks in the next 8 years. And that's why you are seeing we are losing revenue, but we are also losing the numbers. The number of commuters in our system is dropping. And we can't measure whether it's dropping or the ones that are paying are dropping. We suspect that It's one of the two, but we are actually looking at it. But the reality is that once we refocused and we said, hey, we are upgrading, we are doing this, we left the real operation. And then, and I think our commuters are feeling that pinch. And then, and we needed to recheck it up to say, no, we hear you. And maybe the new baby is coming, but you can't let the real... Because once we finish this 52 billion, or 100 and, is it 60, 72, once we finish it, we won't have any system. There won't be any commuters. And that creates a big problem. So for us, it's balancing the two. That becomes very important. I think we have answered why the regular expenditure is going up rather than down. The more you do the investigations, the more you pick up more, because remember that one is just a regulatory audit, so it picks up certain things, but it doesn't pick up others. So through this process, we have managed to get more and more, and you'll see that it's prior years. But the other thing that we must understand about the regular expenditure is, if the contract is irregular, any payments that you make this year will be irregular in relation to that contract. Yeah. So that's how it works. So it creates that problem for us. We have dealt with the issue of the smart usefulness and verifiable. If something is not measurable, you can't verify and you can't measure it. So if you can't measure it, it's very useless. So it can't be very useful. So those are the issues that we are dealing with. Technical insolvency. The issue of technical insolvency just says, it is what is one of the biggest problems that we have. We have a thing called a budget, a deficit budget. So we budgeted for a deficit. Now you can only budget for a deficit if you have the ability to borrow. Now these are one of the technical aspects of what we must look at in the funding of PRASA going forward. Does it make sense to fund this big capital project using equity? I don't think that. Now, here is the question. No, everyone in the way, you must go to ESCOM, they are funding a massive program, they've got debt. You must go to Transnet, they are funding a big program, they've got debt. Because it has got other benefits. But here's the problem. As I said, we are sick. Now imagine you are giving a sick patient and you are saying donate blood. It's going to be a problem. Because here is where we are. We are saying, if we are going to go debt, we better get our house in order. Because to manage debt is a totally different aspect of how you do it. So it's going to be important that we look at it and see whether it makes sense to continue to fund it this way. I think it's the most expensive way of funding a capital project to use all equity in it. I don't think that it makes sense, but it's something that we are busy with and we are looking at. We are looking for a better capital structure for PRASA at this stage because of where we are. We are 3B. Everyone else I've talked about is Schedule 2. So we need to look at those matters. Hiding issues. Well, I don't think we can. Even if we wanted to, I suspect in PRASA you can't hide anything. I mean, the Honorable Member has just said 600 pages. He even knows the pages better than us. Hiding in PRASA is not going to help. And I don't think that that's the thinking that we have. We concede on a lot of matters. But we also seem to think we take the flag for all the other things that at least people should be saying, but you are doing better here and there. And really, it's demoralizing to the staff. I think the morale where PRASA is just being seen as these people that, you know, are worse than everybody else. I think it's unfair. The unfairness of it is that we have got a system that for 50 years was never invested in. And we must keep this system going. These trains are breaking up everywhere. Right? And it's our employees that take the flag from the commuter. Now, if they also take the flag from the portfolio committee that understands where we are, I think we must be beaten, but at times don't kill us in the process. Please, we are here for hiding when we don't do our work. But I think to the extent that we must not discourage those in Prasa that are working very hard to keep the system going. I think the issue of 52% we have set ourselves that is not sustainable, and we know. But we don't want to leave this committee with a sense that we are going to cut jobs in Prasa. Not yet. If there are jobs we are going to cut, it must be in the executive and senior management level. We are just top heavy. We need to reduce. We are pear-shaped the way we are. It just doesn't work. So we need to make sure that people at least come to work and earn a living and not be, as commuters call us, check collectors. Duplication of responsibility from Transnet and Prasa. I don't think there's a duplication of responsibility. I just think that it's an unfair process. It's an unfair process of a thing called an elephant in the room of PCOT, in the room of Cabinet of South Africa, in the room of the people in the transport sector. Why is Transnet still with public enterprises? Someone must explain that thing first. Because public enterprise in the first place was supposed to be a temporary department. Now, and we know that. So we know where the problems lie. And I think if we want to locate this discussion, we must locate it where it belongs. And it belongs squarely here. It belongs squarely here. You must tell us whether we can ever run a network separated amongst what you are transporting. Here is a problem that we have. The bigger part of this network is maintained by Transnet. Now, those who tell you will tell you that the TQI, which is the track quality index, which measures the track quality for passengers and for freight, are not the same. You can carry freight fairly on a dilapidated infrastructure, you're still fast. But passengers, that will be a problem. Now, we must then hold MLPS through that. Who must maintain this infrastructure and who's supposed to own it? It's a question that we must ask ourselves and a question we must answer. I don't think there are duplications. I think there's a decision that has got to be taken, and it lies squarely here in the committee and I think in the transport sector in general. And it's a discussion that we must have because we believe in other things. We also believe that when we separated assets, they took what was supposed to be ours. And they have maintained some of that. They decided that this is non-core to them and they've sold that or they've lacked investment in those areas. And you can't blame them for it. It's not their core business. It's our core business. So we need to do that. And it's a big problem. We will deal with it as we go forward. Some of the reasons of why we are not able to get the numbers of reliable rolling stock back is because they've missed their targets. They've missed their targets by more than 50% of bringing back the rolling stock that we need. What does that mean? That means overloaded trains, it means a lot of other things. We are running trains that are short and all the other matters. And then I think we need to discuss those matters here. We've dealt with issues of vacancies, staff morale. What do you expect when this man is going to be chopped? Well, I believe that if you have been given a mandate, you just do it. If you die because of that, it's all so fine, but you just carry out what you are doing. I have been told to go to Prasa, to work with my colleagues, to turn around Prasa, and that's what I do. Do I worry about being removed? I still have my job, so I don't worry about that. I still am the CFO of the Department of Transport, duly appointed, so I don't have those issues. The cut in security, very difficult. Very difficult to cut security. Why? As I said, we've got an open system. It doesn't help us because we also have a dysfunctional railway police. So some of them even refuse to get into trains. They are more interested in stamping affidavits. They think those politicians there are for that.
And we have got an engagement. We are having an engagement with the commissioner about this matter. The issue about command and control becomes very important. When you find 10 of them sitting in a station and doing nothing, and people are being robbed in a train, what do you do as PRASA? It's something that we also hope will get the support of this committee in dealing with that, because they are funded. We don't want to take their mandate. However, if they are not going to assist us, it defeats the whole purpose of why they are there in the first place. We are going to cut costs at some point. We have to, but we have to look at the big ticket items. 52% is the area we are targeting. Security is the area we are targeting. Energy costs is an area we are targeting. What we have picked up is that in the energy costs, we are also paying subsidy while we are receiving subsidy. But we are not paying tax. Is it a feasible thing? We don't think so. That's the discussion we are having with ESCO. To say we can't be paying you to go and electrify while we can't provide transport. So it's very important that we look at those matters. FCM, supporting documents. Well, we hear of shredding. That has happened. We hear of shredding that has happened in PRASA when investigations were coming. We also, the reality is that we also have a document management system that is dysfunctional, if it exists at all. So we are correcting that as we move forward. Some people have left, and it looks like they have left with our documents. So we have to look at that. Well, I don't think that the Honorable Khadebe says AGSA is misleading. It's not necessarily misleading. It's just omitting to state other facts. I don't think the intention might just be misleading, but I think they must put a context to issues. And I think in areas they have like to put context, and it creates an impression of what is not there. Realignment of the organization, we will do that. We'll realign the organization. Will we save more money? We think so. We think we can save more money as PRASA, and we are working very hard to ensure, because it just can't happen that we make losses. At some point, something must give. But is it we always say what is good about cutting costs is that it goes straight to the bottom line. If you increase the revenue, you'll have to deduct costs before you arrive to the bottom line. But if you cut costs, straight to the bottom line. So for us, we know where to start. We are clear about cutting costs. As I said, at times we are a victim of our own negligence. We slept on the job when we took certain assets from Transnet. We also, sometimes we don't implement. We have good contracts, and they've got penalty clauses, like these ones of people supplying components. There's a penalty clause. We just decided one day to write a thing to say we won't be implementing the penalty clause. Why? No one knows. So it's those things that we are clawing back. Where is the GCFO? She's home, she's sick. She's home, she's sick. Who's acting? Yvonne Page is acting on my left. Chair, we shouldn't make comments about matters of the employer-employee in forums of this nature. Employer-employee, very important confidential matters.
Yeah.
That must remain confidential to retain the dignity of those who work with us. It's important that we do that. What we can safely say is that we are dealing with the matters management. It's a management issue. It's not for you, Chair. I had Honorable Khadave giving you the powers that belong to us. Please don't get tempted. Those are our powers, Honorable Khadave. We will deal with the matter. We are dealing with the matter as the executives in Brasa. We'll deal with the matter, and of course we'll report accordingly once we've dealt with those matters. How old am I? I'm 40. 40. I'm 40 years old, very young, young at heart. I know I make 40 look young, but I'm 40. Yeah, so, I don't know why the question, but I'm just answering what I was asked. How long am I in Brasa? It's going to be 4 months, the fourth month now in Brasa.
103 days to be specific.
July, I'm 3 months, this is my fourth month in Brasa. Happily married to Jackie, happily married, three of them. Yeah, but the issue is, it has been, the 3 months that we have spent in Brasa have been baptism of fire. But I think we have moved a great, and you'll see to the outcome of the turnaround plan that we'll put. And I must say, I have a capable executive that is supportive in the main. So we're working very, very hard to make sure that we restore Brasa to where it should be. It is difficult to change a culture. It's difficult to turn around the Titanic when it's taking a different direction. But we are not heading to the iceberg, hopefully. We'll avoid it. So we'll deal with those matters as they come. Train control officers. Here is the problem. Yes, they don't belong to us. They belong to Transnet. Should we pay them? Maybe we should. But what happened in the Eastern Cape is a very nice example, or a very crude example of what would happen when you don't necessarily run a network. We lost two locomotives because of the mistake of a TCO that was fired. Now the system collapsed totally after those two locomotives were lost. Who's responsible for it? Transnet. What are we going to do about it? We don't know. They are not going to reimburse us. They are not going to do anything. They said to us, who insured the locomotives? I said, I'm happy to give you the money. Restore my service. I'm not interested in the money the insurance is going to give me. You have fired a guy that was found to be at fault. It's fine. But the question is, what is it that I am going to get out of this? I would have loved them to restore me with two locomotives and take the money, allow my service to still be the same as where it is. TCO in Eastern Cape. The last train accident we had in KZN, where we lost two trains. Same thing. TCO, Transnet. What am I getting? Nothing. Well, is it insured? Yes. Would I get the money? Yes. Is it going to restore my service? No. So, those are things that we deal with on a daily. That's why for us, it's important that this elephant in the room must be dealt with, and we must not veer around it every time. Yeah. The issue about the smart issues, as I said, we are working together with the Auditor General to ensure that our targets are smart. The issue around vacancies, at the top leadership of Prasa, there are no vacancies except the one I sit in. I think the one in HR, I think there are two. But we think we can operate with 20 executives. We have 65. So we need a 70% cut in executives. as the reality. So it's something that we think we are top heavy, as I said. I don't think leadership is shortage in Brasa per se. Repeat findings, we are working on those repeat findings. We'll table a plan, as we said, and a plan seeks to solve some of those problems. I just got a note that for the 8 suspended employees of the 9 that were involved in that in the matter at hand, the disciplinary process has been concluded and the ruling is expected during this month or early next month. Is it a good thing that people have been out for that long? No. We must move with speed when we deal with matters of disciplinary and expedite that, but in the same process, adhere to processes so that we don't walk found wanting and then found to be unfair in the process. Thank you very much, Chair.
Oh, thanks to the people that have been making responses. Members, are there any gaps in the responses? Are there follow-ups? Would like to, okay, where are we? Do we have luxury of time or are we in the danger zone? Where are we? Okay, thanks. Can I note him? Okay, Honorable Kata, Honorable Ramatlakane, Honorable Rohade. In that order. Honorable Kata?
Thank you, Chair. Mine is just on clarity. What is the relationship between the investigations? You know, if we look at the report, especially where the section, let me just give you the page number 93, which is from the Auditor General. The relationship between the forensic audit instituted by National Treasury, there's over 100 cases there. The relationship with Werksmann and then the 39 cases of the Hawks. Now, the reason I'm asking that is specifically I know that we've instituted forensic investigations before. And what would happen is that you have to actually supply the information for the investigation. So is that the work that Werksmann is really doing to assist the National Treasury and the Hawks cases? Then also just very interestingly, and I'm saying this specifically because talking about forensic audits where your cost could be up to 10%. When we spoke about the 2% professional fee, you said it included also Werksmann. So I just want to get an indication how much of that 2% professional fees, you might not have an answer now, but you know, I think automatically when we talk about a forensic audit, you immediately think that the cost could be as much as 10 to 12% of your actual turnover. And if it's only part of a 2%, I'd like to know what percentage more or less is, you know, part of that 2%. Thank you.
Okay, the new pilot is suggesting 1 minute, the speaker. Thank you.
1 minute, Chair. I don't know whether he's targeting me that 1 minute, but let me try and do it. No, Chair, just a quick follow-up. The follow-up is this, we don't have the money, but we incurred the cost of 100 million. The whatever money that we wanted to do environment has been rejected. So this is going to constitute irregular expenditure. Now, the critical question for me, Chair, you saying Group CEO, Acting Group CEO, you've written to Treasury for Treasury to explain or to clarify whether this is indeed, what is their take. I had asked the question, what has been the Auditor General's view on it? Or was it considered by him or was not considered? What is his view about it? Because I just need to know, because we kept asking this question, and you're saying from now on, these matters are going to be dealt with by the officials. No longer, it presupposes that it was dealt with by the board before. So is that what you are saying, including the signing off on the scope of the investigation? Because I just want to find out more or less what is the scope of this thing and who signed off on the scope of this investigation. And when you sign the investigation, obviously you put the money aside. Was that the actual budget, 100 million, or is it something that was put, any amount, which is not necessarily being, could be, say, indicative for estimated cost of this particular investigation? And for that, I just want you, if you could help us to understand that, who actually signed off on the scope, and what was the scope? Because we kept asking that particular question. And why would you want the Treasury to have a comment on something that is being considered by AG if it has?
Thank you. The last speaker, Honorable Hanover.
No, thanks, Chair. My Chair, I think it's very much simple. If the acting DG can just extract that legislation that is giving problems in relation to PRASA, issues of this locomotive and everything, because as far as I understand is that there's a legislation that gives you permission to take over the lines and whatsoever, so that you can be able to facilitate the willingness of the two elephants, which is the Minister of Transport and Minister of Public Enterprise, because these two elephants, they must stop making the grass to suffer. Must be able to deal with these two elephants. If you can be able to assist us with that one, I think we can be able to, at least, so that next time when you come here, we don't deal with one and the same thing. Because I think that will be able to assist us. Thank you.
Okay, can we get responses? Can't I start with you acting Group CEO? Then if the board chair identifies a gap, he follows. Thanks.
Okay. I think the chair will add on this one, but as I said, there are issues that the Hawks are dealing with. Yes, we supply that information to the Hawks. Then they must also do their own investigation and proceed as it were. Is it linked to National Treasury? Yes, there were things that 10 million and above was given to National Treasury and they were going to do it. Yes, there is interaction between, because it looks like in other cases, the people that are at this side are also on the other side. So they do talk to each other from time to time. We don't have the money. Yes, we don't. Would we do with an extra 100 million? Of course we would. Was this considered by the AG? They looked at it, but they didn't necessarily audit it. So it's something that, why are we taking it to the National Treasury to determine? It's because the CFO feels very strongly that the way it was procured is irregular. The board, on the other side, believes that the way they've done it was regular. Now, you see, we didn't want to sit in that space. We said, let's get someone who is an external arbiter to arbitrate over the matter and then come with their own determination and see who they agree with. So we have agreed we are going to do that. Who signed off on the scope? I think the chair will deal with that. It was a matter of the board. The chair will deal with the issue of, I couldn't find any estimates that says this was estimated to be the safe for the rates that have been charged by the investigators, for, as it were. In most of these cases, you'll find that it works out that way. It was not budgeted for, so it continues not to be budgeted for on the matter. Well, I don't know. I don't know whether not budgeting for something makes it irregular. It doesn't necessarily make it irregular. Irregular is something that goes against the prescript of a policy. So there is no policy that it has gone against. There is no law that we know that precludes us from having it done that way. If we were a department and it was 100 million above, then it would be a thing called unauthorized. Okay? And I had the part that says something, irregular expenditure does not come to Parliament. It's condoned by the accounting authority or the authority that was supposed to be there in approving it in terms of the rules. It doesn't come to Parliament, irregular expenditure, for condonement.
Yeah, let me, Chair, confirm what the AGCO has said on the relationship between National Treasury, the Hawks, and the investigation of PRASA, which has been done by Worksmen. I tried to explain this previously. When we started all these investigations, we had a meeting with the minister, the DG in the DOT, the CPO, National Treasurer, Mr. Kenneth Brown, myself, and I don't know who else from PRASA. And we agreed that we needed to coordinate the investigations in accordance with how we categorize the parcels of work to be done. But PRASA, then it was decided that those investigations happening, they would all be channeled through PRASA. PRASA would then report to the executing authority of transport. The Hawks came into picture to the extent that criminality was identified. A lot of work was done. They were given initially about 39 cases. They're probably standing around 43 now. They've been given a lot of information, evidence. But there are aspects of these investigations which only a state organ such as the Hawks or SAPS, with their various divisions, can deal with. For example, there's money laundering, there's racketeering. They have to get into the bank accounts of various people. They require, therefore, by law, to issue subpoenas, to subpoena those people to get there. And that's the work that they are continuing to do. Our biggest concern with the Hawks was that although we put in such a lot of work into this thing, and they are major, and they are very serious matters here. We spoke about 14 billion rand of irregular expenditure. Part of that relates to what is considered to be potentially a criminal and fraudulent act. They had allocated only one officer to do the work, which creates serious difficulties for us. Because we think this is a matter that must be dealt with very urgently, because it has delayed a whole lot of our programs, and it involves big amounts of the taxpayers' money. But Mr. Letswalo and our legal department are meeting regularly with the Hawks. I think the deputy head of the Hawks, General Kana, meets regularly with Martha and Fanny Dingiswayo. Mr. Letswalo wrote to them. I wrote to Mr. Sean Abrams. I wrote to Mr. Tlemeza, Commissioner Tlemeza, Brigadier Tlemeza. I also wrote to Mr. Kana and our own minister to say intervene with the Minister
of police. So we are dealing with these matters. We do hope that I'm expecting, of course, Mr. Letswalo to make a follow-up on the letter he has written to them to speed up these matters. Who signed off? This matter was signed off by the then acting group CEO. The scope of work, the letter of mandate was signed by him, Nathi Khena, after it had been discussed. We looked at it and looked at the remedial action of the public protector, the findings of the Auditor General, and the obligations arising out of the public finance management. And that is where we are at the time. Of course, we didn't have a budget. We didn't know that these things were going to happen. The request was made through the Audit and Risk Committee, having been channeled through the board, that management under the leadership of Mr. Khena should budget for this matter. It was not done. We became aware of it, I think, around June or so, that there was this problem. So it is a problem that we need to continue addressing. I think all of us would agree that this is a massive challenge facing the country. I mean, just from what the AGC CEO has been saying, you can see what difficulties we have in that organization. There was a culture of disregard of rules, disregard of laws, disregard of systems, and so on. And therefore, we see all the work that is being done and the work that has been done by the public protector and other entities being not so much the work that seeks to pursue individuals, but to get at the root of the problems so that we can then put in place systems that in the future would enable us to avoid the weaknesses that we have seen in this period. Of course, from our side, we have to attempt to hold management accountable. But your difficulty, you can only hold management accountable if the group CEO and the group chief financial officer do their work and they hold those who report to them accountable. The best we can do is to keep asking for the report. We were asked whether Mr. Letswalo, Honorable Chair, whether we think he has performed well. I think what he has told this committee speaks volumes of what he has been able to do in the short space of time that he has been in the department. I'm amazed by the extent to which he has come to grasp what is happening within PRASA. I'm personally, and we said so in a board meeting when he started telling us what he's doing, I said in that board meeting, if that is what you are doing, you have the full support of this board, because we've been waiting for a leader who would act, and make sure that the organization does what it has to do. And I think we have that in Mr. Letswalo. He's not my friend. He's a youngster that I did not know. I did not know much before I come to work with him. But increasingly, I know it might sound like I'm flattering you. I've increasingly come to admire him. And the good thing about him is that he doesn't curry favors with anybody. If I am wrong or the minister is wrong, he's going to say, Minister, you are now beginning to tread on dangerous grounds on which only the holy ones must tread. And we don't take offense because it's important that as leaders, we have somebody who serves as a conscience to us when we make mistakes, to brings us back into course. I am happy with the job that the man is doing, and I do think that, speaking for myself, that if you want to turn around this organization, we need to give him that space give him as much time as possible to do the job. And I'm saying to him, carry your team with you so that your team, you inculcate in your team this culture, assertiveness, and action-oriented leadership. So that's really my parting with Chairperson. I think we have done a lot in this short space of time. I wish we had it when we were just immediately after Mr. Montana left, or even when we started.
Thank you, for Chairperson. Those were the responses. We are done with the questions. We are done with the responses. We now await your response, acting DJ.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm definitely acting DJ, not acting. But Chair, the question that was asked was the issues around Trans and Transnet. I think as Lizwal is saying, if you benchmark throughout the world, there is no split between freight rail and passenger rail. It's not there. So I think the reality in the country is that you have them split, but you also have them also owning infrastructure in terms of rail and rail tracks, and therefore the issue of access becomes key. And the reality is Transnet's network is bigger than that of Metro Rail, the old Metro Rail. So you will always find where Prasa or Metro Rail requires access. But in the main is the Shosholoza mail, which they, by the way, they've given to the Department of Transport without money. That needs to have access. And hence the performance of Shosholoza mail, as it were. Now, the biggest answer, I mean, the answer is really lies with what we initially thought would be the RER, Rail Economic Regulator, but now is going to be the Interim Rail Economic Regulator, and therefore staff, should we succeed. We are fighting with the likes of Transnet because it talks to the issue of economic regulation and to some extent separating operations from infrastructure. But I think, that's where the real answer lies going forward. It is not going to happen now. It will not happen now. We will talk to Transnet shareholder around issue of access, to improve access to access to passenger rail. And I must indicate also the 800 million. Basically, Prasa Department and National Treasury. There's not even the Prasa decision to take it from CAPEX to OPEX, but it had to go through that. So this has got support of those structures of government. I will definitely not deal with the issues. I've been tempted to deal with this issue around the audit outcomes, Auditor General, and how we work. But perhaps because of time, Chair, we will park that. I also did not have the opportunity to apologize earlier on. I really do apologize. I had a very terrible day. When I woke up, when I left home at 4 a.m., I did not know that I will have an accident, and then I will also have a flight that would have made me still delay by 30 minutes and not leave our Tambo until it made me come here about an hour and a half later. So a lot has just happened in that space for me today. Maybe I need prayer. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Okay, I think on that note, your apology, Acting GG, is accepted. Can I assume that this is the end of the discussion? And also that, can we be assured that tomorrow won't be discussing credentials. There will be a person from the department with authority, and also SANRAL. We're meeting SANRAL and SAMHSA tomorrow. Oh, yes, because no, I think this is the end of the program for today. Can I? Is it not?
No.
Oh yes. Sorry for misleading you. What I think I should do is to take back the meeting to the chairperson of the portfolio committee, because now I'm doing something else. Thank you, chairperson of the committee. I think you must come back to your place. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned for lunch. We will take a 30 minutes break for lunch, and then we will be joined by RSR. Let me thank Dr. Mulefe, the acting group CEO and the acting group CFO, the company secretary. Who did I forget? I think all. Yeah.